The From Day One podcast is brought to you by The Bridge. Visit us at thebridgebk.com.
Hi, I'm Nick Bailey, and this is the From Day One podcast. Today's guest is Eric Johnson, co-founder of Argosy Designs. Founded in 2004, along with Jen Johnson Kuhn, Argosy Designs is known for architectural design and fabrication of customized metalwork, lighting, hardware, and furniture. Notable clients of the company include Bergdorf Goodman, Roman and Williams Buildings and Interiors, and the Ian Schrager Company, whose new public hotel has head-to-toe lit-up escalators thanks to Argosy. The company's staff of designers and craftsmen work out of Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Whether it's wall panels of a hotel lobby or modern chandelier or a bronze and lucite coffee table, Argosy is known for fine design and attention to detail. In addition, Argosy will be showing at Brooklyn Designs from May 11th to 13th next month. For the first time, Brooklyn Designs is going to be at the Brooklyn Museum this year, and The Bridge is involved as a media partner as well. So I hope you guys can join. And Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So Argosy has been around for about 15 years, starting in 2004. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how it got started and what prompted you to open your own business?
Well, I guess that's a long story, moderately complicated story, but I came to New York to go to art school, actually, in the mid-90s, and that was the beginning of that journey. I was always the guy that made things for everybody else.
Where are you from originally?
Colorado.
Gotcha. Whereabouts?
Denver, born and raised.
Denver.
And went to university in Boulder, mm-hmm. and then came here for graduate school at the New York Academy. So during that time, held, like a young person does, a lot of various jobs, none really related directly to this industry. But I was made my way as a painter for a while, and that exchange didn't really make sense to me after a time.
Exchange, tell me about what does that word mean in this context?
Well, I think it was a difficult exchange for me in terms of work versus commodity, making money in the art world. The art world was it was complicated and one that I didn't really feel comfortable in necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't always make sense. It wasn't a one-to-one exchange. I make this and you pay me for that, and so while making my way as a painter, I was doing things on the side. And this eventually became the full focus of my activity. I was an artist assistant for a while, and worked some other. I worked for Barney's in their prop shop, doing things there. And actually, a designer there, I redid his home, and that sort of really launched Argosy.
You said that you'd started out like you were always building stuff. What was it? What kind of things were you doing? Did you grow up like into building model trains or carpentry or
I came from
skateboard ramp?
No, I came from a family that you built things, you fixed things. My grandfather had a shop, my father had a shop, and
were they both entrepreneurs as well?
No, they weren't. They're both educators, mm-hmm. actually. But building and fixing was always an important part of our family, and something I really kind of took for granted for many years. It's just sort of what you did. If it was broken, you fixed it, mm-hmm. and that's a place where I always felt comfortable being in my father's shop or my grandfather's shop.
What kind of shop were they, like carpenters, metalworkers?
My grandfather was, he was a tinkerer, just fixed things, mm-hmm. lots of glass jars full of nuts and bolts, and my father was primarily a woodworker.
Mm-hmm.
So spent a lot of time there as a kid, just, with him, fixing things, making things.
How did you get started as an artist in that context? Were they related?
No, I have a very sort of strange pause in my own history. Coming from Colorado, the outdoors was important, and actually starting about 14, I spent a lot of time in the mountains. And directly after high school, I was a full time rock climber.
Hmm. How do you get a job as a full-time rock climber? That's a sweet gig, right?
I had a little bit of sponsorship eventually, but back then it was a very sort of outsider sport, and it was more about, it was very, 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 you lived on the cheap, so it wasn't a job per se, but it was a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Traveled a lot, and eventually made the choice to go back to school, and the thing that made sense to me to go back to school for was art and drawing, something that I'd always done. And so that there was a certain amount of design in that art, and that I went to school in Oregon for for art briefly and came back to Boulder. Got my my bachelor's degree in painting at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Who were your who were some of your heroes in art? Who did you want to be at the time when you were young as an artist?
I'm a big influence early on was Egon Schiele, Gustav Klimt. I mean, some of the usual suspects probably. I was really a figurative painter, sort of with a bit of a surrealist bent. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of a circuitous route that got me to New York. Came here to go to graduate school. But while at university in Boulder, I had a company then that I made frames and stretcher bars for a lot of people. So I've always been making things, you know. Mm-hmm. Making all the odd piece of furniture here and there throughout all of this to for my own apartment or my own loft, and did the same when I came to New York. So eventually started Argosy Designs actually out of the basement of my Brooklyn apartment on the south side of Williamsburg in the early 2000s.
And when you started, who were your customers at the time? Did you have customers already, or did you sort of start with like a business plan, or did you just kind of just open the door one day?
I was doing, as I said, I was kind of always doing things on the side, and working at Barney's, I met some people there, and I think as I mentioned, I did a lot of work for one of their designers in his personal apartment, and that sort of got my foot in the door, and I did a lot of work for him. Eventually, he was an artist and a designer. Still work with him today, actually.
Tell us a little bit about the decision making process. I think a lot of people in Brooklyn. As far as I can tell, a lot of people that listen to this podcast, themselves have ideas that they'd love to sort of capture. What was your thought process like when you decided to start a business? Like, how did you know that could work and that having a job, wasn't what you were going to do? Like, how did you cross that line into doing your own thing?
That's a complicated question, I guess. I've always been an independent person, and I remember even when I was young, My parents asked me what I wanted to do, and I said I wanted to own my own business. That was the thing. It wasn't a fireman or whatever. That was the important part. So it happened sort of organically. It as I said, I was unhappy with the sort of exchange of the art world. It didn't seem to matter how much hard work you put in or didn't put in, whether you made it or didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And so this focus of doing something creative but still working with your hands became this honest exchange that made sense to me. And it developed organically. I had some work. I was still selling a few paintings, and eventually the work took over. So it wasn't started with a concrete business plan. I mean, I went to art school. it was really just about making things. Mm-hmm. And it was a different time in Brooklyn then too. You had a bit more freedom. Things weren't so expensive. We were fortunate. We lived on the ground floor. I had a full basement and a backyard. And eventually set up a full metal shop in the basement of that apartment, and made a lot of things in the basement. That would be hard to do now,
right?
I think,
What were some of the first things that you actually made?
Well, early on, I did restoration work also. So I did some restoration work. Worked on some beautiful brownstones up in Harlem and in the West Village, and I also did a lot of woodwork then too, built-ins and small pieces of furniture. But the metalwork was what I always wanted to do. And that started with doing like small pieces of hardware. It may be on the cabinetry that was built in or that kind of a thing. So, but that's really where I wanted to be. It was just hard to get a footing to be able to make that custom work. And I worked hard to allow it to take over, and did things for less than I should have charged, just to do the work, to bolster the portfolio and to grow the business.
So you're working out of your basement. You've got a fledgling business of your own. You've got some metal work going on, some residential construction going on. At some point here, you end up working with these very sort of high profile, high design projects. That obviously didn't happen overnight. What were some of the first baby steps that you guys took as a company into that world?
I ended up doing some pretty important pieces for Barney's, actually, and some work out of state. San Francisco, Dallas, and I ended up renting some temporary space to do these large 40-foot sculptures for the designer that was a part of those projects. And those really acted as a springboard to then move out of that basement and rent permanent shop space. And at this time, it was still just me, and then a bookkeeper, and then one assistant, and then I moved to a fairly small 1,000-square-foot shop, not far from the Navy Yard. So that was those major pieces for Barney's were a great springboard to get the shop rolling, and this eventually led to doing some work with Roman and Williams and the Ace Hotel.
So tell us a little bit about what those pieces were. You know, we can't see them here in the magic of you know, radio, podcasting, whatever we call it. Tell us a little bit about what kind of stuff were you doing? You mentioned giant sculptures. Like, you know, what were these projects like?
They were still multimedia. There was brass elements and steel elements, some hand carved wood and laminated linen and glass. These pieces were display, but I, if you know Barney's, they always do a really beautiful job of really going above and beyond. We did about a 90-foot elliptical sculpture for the Barney's in Las Vegas, again with the same designer. We did a lot of simple display elements for them too, but always really nice pieces. None of this was our design, and we're executing this from the artist, from the designer.
Did you guys work with at this point are these kinds of things done with like computers? Is CAD and CAM? Do you get like a computer files, or is it still tons of just handwork?
No, this is handwork. Like this is all handwork. You know, these are all drawings, especially mm-hmm. working with this designer early on. These are hand sketches. He's in the studio. We're working on figuring out how to make it, how to scale it, what he wants. You know, very very hands on. And that was the case for most of the early work. It wasn't done with anything more than a sketch.
Interesting.
Even a lot of the Ace Hotel work was done from just a sketch.
How did it feel when you first saw, like, I mean, did you go out to Las Vegas and see this thing in place?
Or? I installed it, actually.
Yeah, like, yeah. How did it feel to, like, you know, walk into something that, you know, high profile and see something that you'd made?
You know, in some ways, I think I took it for granted. We were so busy, and I grew quickly, and I was hiring more guys, and we were just busy working and making that I was honored to be a part of it. It was a you know, but I don't think the gravity of any of it ever really sunk in. We just kept working, you know. It was always on to the next.
That's a hard thing to do, the thing that you've just described. You know, a lot of people you know, have a job where they work for somebody else. They create things, whether they're real physical world things like you or digital things or whatever they create.
Right.
And then there's like big companies that have process and structure and an HR department. That gap between the two is a really difficult thing to cross.
Yes.
You know,
indeed.
It's really hard. Do you have any insight into how you did it? You know, you went from being essentially like a freelancer or like a one-off kind of shop, and then you describe being, you know, super busy and having a team. How did you get from one to the other? You know,
the first people that I hired were the things that either I couldn't do or didn't want to do. Like I had a part-time bookkeeper almost from the start. You know, money is not my, managing money and accounts is not my strong point. Now, taxes, certainly not even now. And then hiring people to do some of the, you know, a lot of this work involves tremendous amounts of handwork. You're sanding, you're finishing, you're cleaning, you're filing. So I kept the skilled stuff in my court and then hired people to help with some of the more necessary labor-intensive stuff, and it grew naturally that way, you know. And for many, many years, I was the only welder in the shop. I think up until maybe even only 6 years ago, I welded everything. I still work in the machine shop. So hiring people for the things that either you're not good at, you don't want to do, or you can't do, you know, that was the progression.
A lot of founders also have a problem where they underestimate how hard it's going to be to get new business, or how much time they're going to have to spend dealing with clients versus actually, you know, doing the thing that their company does. Did you have problems along those lines as well? Were you surprised by any of that?
It, to some degree. I mean, there's always necessary paperwork and things that took time were doing estimates. And
did you have to market yourself, or was word of mouth really driving you?
We've never marketed ourselves. So Argosy as a company is only word of mouth for 15 years. And I feel very fortunate that we grew that way. And so no, we've never done any marketing. Just work.
So speaking of work, you mentioned a couple big sort of Some bigger projects that started to come along. You mentioned the Ace Hotel was probably one of them, right?
I would assume. That's right.
What was your project there? What were you responsible for on that project?
So we did a lot of the work in the public spaces there. A lot of the tables, a lot of the lighting, some of the bookshelves. We did a lot of really beautiful pieces with Stephen and Robin of Roman and Williams.
What is Roman and Williams for someone who doesn't know?
They're an interior design firm, but they also produce their own line of furniture now, and they're designing buildings now. I mean, they're buildings and interiors, mm-hmm. buildings and interiors firm. Really talented people. So we did a lot of the stuff in the public spaces there. We also did some things in the rooms as well. But that was a really high profile project for us. We worked with them on the Ace Hotel. Lobby, but we also did Stumptown with them, which is a coffee shop there, and the John Dory, and a few other projects. We worked on that, and they were probably for a year or more, and that was a very high profile project for us.
It's also influential, right? I mean, I think you could certainly point to quite a few other hotel properties and now restaurant chains and retail properties that have taken. There's a design aesthetic there that's really become like, I don't know, a movement, whatever you want to call it,
or co-opted.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've been a part of that movement and aesthetics?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we watched things change too. During that period, there's a lot of exposed filament light bulbs and raw brass and heavy timber, and then it shifted to finer finishes like polished brass and stainless steels, and so it was good to be in on the ground floor of that movement with some really important designers doing, I think, really good work. That work, I think, still stands, not just ours, but the project in general. So mm-hmm. I was glad to be a part of it from the beginning, or at least early on.
Do you think there's a Brooklyn aesthetic for commercial spaces these days?
That's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, to be honest, most of our work is in Manhattan. Mm. Even though we're a Brooklyn shop, we've always been a Brooklyn shop. Probably 90% of our work is in Manhattan. Really,
do you notice inquiries from outside of the city, like from national or international customers that kind of want some of what you've got?
Yeah, we do. Probably less than you'd think. We do work a lot with various interior design firms and architects, and some of their clients are overseas or international, and our work has been shipped there, but we're still working with them directly. That's our main clients, are architects and designers.
Have you guys thought about leaving Brooklyn? Like, why do you guys work in Brooklyn and stay in Brooklyn? It's expensive. It's challenging for someone that needs a lot of space and makes a lot of noise.
It is, and it's gotten more so. I mean, it's gotten even more difficult. But I think living and working here, it allows you to work on projects that I don't think you'd be able to work on most anywhere else in the world. Even through the recession, we grew and the projects kept going. It's just like New York is special in that way, I think. There's always good design here and great projects. And I don't think you'd have that somewhere else. Even in a good city, somewhere like Denver or where I'm from, it's just not the same. So that keeps us here.
Gotcha. How big are you guys right now?
We have about 20 employees, and we have a 10,000 square foot facility. So
up in Greenpoint?
In Greenpoint.
Gotcha. And you guys just that's your one location? That's where everything happens?
That's right. Yeah, everything.
Interesting. Talk about a little bit, what do you guys see for the future for Argosy? What are you hoping the next couple of years looks like?
Well, what's new for us, and I guess it's the part of the point of this conversation, is that we are launching a product line, which has been in the works for a long time. So it's Argosy Product Division, and that's going to debut at the Brooklyn Designs show at the Brooklyn Museum on the 11th of May. So that's a big part of the future for us, and we can talk more about that, but that's not to say that our fabrication work...
We should. Products is a very broad word.
It's very broad.
Tell me what you mean.
No, we're going to continue with our fabrication. I mean, that's really important. That's our fabrication and custom architectural metalwork is going to continue as it has. But for the debut, I think we've got maybe 8 to 10 pieces that we're launching initially. It's heavy on the lighting side, but also tables, chairs, And we've probably got another 50 pieces in development right now. So this is really picking up a lot of momentum.
What made you decide to do that? Did you guys create these kinds of pieces for clients already, presumably?
Well, in some ways. And we do a lot of custom furniture. And a lot of it's not on our website. We can't show it for proprietary reasons sometimes. But we've always created a lot of furniture, a lot of lighting. This is something that's been really important to me. I mean, I've been creating pieces throughout the history of the company, either for myself or, you know, my family. And so this is sort of a natural extension, something I've always wanted to do and to continue. And it never seems like the right time to make that leap. You know,
why not?
Well, it's difficult to run, you know, a company of 20 people and find creative time to do this work. So it's taken a real concerted effort to find that time to design. I've done a lot of the prototyping myself, you know, either after hours or extra time in the shop, and it's a natural extension in some ways of what we've done, and it also sort of harkens back to my creative background of being a painter and being an artist in New York City. And while I love the fabrication and the work we do for clients, there's a lack of sometimes creativity because it's not my design or our concept. So there's always creativity in the creation of the work that we do, but a lot of times that's in how it's made or how we're going to make it or the use of materials. So this is a direct creative extension of my own vision, if you will.
Your full design, from the design to construction to delivery, is all you.
Yes. Yeah.
So When you make a decision like that, like this is something I want to do, and of course you're presumably still very busy all day with existing work, what are some of the first steps that you took to launch that new side of the business?
Well, it's really started with just drawing. You know, I've been drawing and working at some of these designs for years, many years, and then I quietly made a couple of the prototypes. Like I said, some of those I made for myself. They're at home, lived with them. Some are at the shop, and then they were modified, and like I said, it never seems like the right time. But then, as I kept making more of these prototypes, more of these pieces, it seemed like the time to put this into action. So those initial sketches that were the prototypes were made from then became formalized drawings, and that's really how a lot of this started. We everything was turned into a proper formalized drawing by some of our staff that works there, and then it turned the corner into then making these into it somehow made them real, you know. So it's still a long and ongoing process, and you always feel like that you could do more, and the design's never done. But at some point, you have to feel just like painting, you have to put it out there. And
how do you put it out there? It's a different business model, right? What you do now is you deliver physical things, but it's kind of like a service that you provide in some ways.
True.
This is a full-fledged product. Are you selling to the end user? Are you going to sell to people who have an apartment? Are you going to really focus on interior designers or stores? Like, how do you make those decisions?
Initially, I mean, we're hoping that we're with some of the interior designers that we work with are going to place the pieces. We're going to have, it'll be online. We'll be launching an online store, and then we'll be looking for partners elsewhere to sell through. But we're looking to build pieces that are higher quality and lower quantity. You know, this is not mass produced pieces. They're still very hand done. So there's still a lot of labor that goes into each one of these pieces. Every finish is hand done. There's a lot of machining. There's a lot of assembly. So, again, it's higher quality, lower quantity.
Gotcha. And are you bringing this stuff to Brooklyn Designs?
We are. Yeah, we're going to bring. I think we've got maybe 8 or 10 pieces.
What kind of things could someone expect to see there if they came by?
We've got several really beautiful chairs and a few tables and a lot of lighting. There's leather and there's wood and there's a lot of metals. So. I'm really excited about the product line. This has really been a long time coming. This is a real personal goal and project for me. This is really it's exciting. It's genuinely exciting. So I hope it's well received, and we've been working toward it for quite a while. So we'll see.
That's great. Well, we're looking forward to seeing it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to From Day One, How Brooklyn Entrepreneurs Got Their Start. This series is made possible by The Bridge, a news site dedicated to reporting on business in Brooklyn. With help from Complex Ventures, a Brooklyn-based digital agency working with more-than-profit companies and organizations. For more from The Bridge, to learn more about today's guest, or to listen to more episodes of From Day One, visit us at thebridgebk.com. That's thebridgebk.com. From Day One is produced by Cora Feeder, Steve Kep, and myself, Nick Bailey. Audio editing and post-production by Steph Derwin. Our theme music was performed by Jody Rockwell and the Ambulamps, and our founding sponsor was the Made in New York Media Center. Thanks for listening.